You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Christmas time is here. Happiness and cheer. Fun for all that children call their favorite time of year. Snow.
Norm Lewis.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to a very holiday edition of Token Theater Friends.
Thank you.
Can we start? Well, can you talk a little bit about the show that you already recorded that's going to be streamed by Feinstein's 54 Below? And before you go into that, just let me say I'm so happy that you're doing this, because like every time I see you in like the Santa Baby show, I know that for me living in New York, Norm Lewis Christmas is something that's going to happen. So thank you for doing it again. And what prompted you to want to do it also?
Well, thank you. That's very, very nice. Nice, kind words. I've 5 years ago, we got asked to do a Christmas show at Feinstein's 54 Below. It was like the only slot that was available. So we said, let's go whole hog and we'll be a Christmas show. And it just it's become a tradition now. So it's me and the Rockettes, you know. If you want to come to New York, come and see me and the Rockettes. But no, it's just been a lot of fun. And this year we were going to miss it because obviously of obvious reasons, but for the cosmos lined up and the planets lined up and 54 Below called and said, hey, we're getting ready to start a new series of filming some live performances. And would you be interested in doing it? So we said, yes, absolutely. And we jumped all in and we got some really great collaborators of cinematographer and, you know, people with wardrobe and things like that. And we said, let's just do it. Let's just go all in and have a lot of fun. Do our show that we've been doing for the past 5 years, an amalgam of that, and spread it to the world. And now, you know, it's for those 5 years, I've only been limited to great crowds, but limited to anywhere from 175 to 200 people a night for 6 nights. And that's it. Now I have fans in Japan who want to see it. Now I have fans in Europe who want to see it, in Australia and around the country, the U.S. So I'm excited about sharing this, you know, this whole Christmas experience with everybody. And it's going to start December 17th at 8:00. That's our opening night. And then you can stream it anytime you want after that, starting after, you know, after that 8:00 period. And you could be watch it at 3:00 in the morning or 12:00 in the afternoon, be in your PJs, or you can dress up in a tuxedo or a gown and have some wine with me or have a cocktail or a glass of milk, whatever you want. And just I just hope to spread some joy.
What's your poison of choice if you're picking a wine or a cocktail?
Well, there actually is a special cocktail that they have every year. They put one in my honor. And this year we're going to repeat one that we had before. It's called the Nutcracker Cooler. And the ingredients, I think we're either putting it out today on social media or sometime this week. And you can make that up and share it with me when you're watching, or have a beer or have a glass of champagne or whatever. But yeah, it's going to be fun.
Also, before I go into like more serious questions, I guess, how do we actually make you and the Rockettes happen and do like a huge spectacular together? Maybe like next Christmas, I hope. Like we're going to want to be outside and doing stuff, not at home.
Absolutely. Well, we can start a campaign. Let's do it. You know, no, I've loved the Rockettes for many years, and that holiday show they do at Radio City Music Hall is fantastic. And so, you know, if you can't afford that, you can come and see this little tiny show that I'm doing in New York City.
Yeah, so go, you'll get started working on those high kicks, I guess.
Normally. Exactly, exactly.
you call it a tiny show, and something that I was very struck by was I love being in that room at Feinstein's, and I love the sense of like intimacy there. Mm-hmm. But you don't put on like a tiny show. It's like seeing you at, I don't know, like the Sydney Opera House, or you have that ability to like turn like a small stage into an experience that's both at the same time. It feels very intimate, but it's also, holy crap. Like you can imagine like thousands of musicians behind you based on the amount of energy and passion that you put into each song. So how do you make that happen?
You know, it's funny. And thank you for that. It's funny for me. I'm glad you brought that up, because the thing about it, I don't even like to call it a show or a cabaret or a concert. I like to call it a party. And whether there's two people in the room or whether there are thousands in the room, I just try to have a good time. I adapted what the Rat Pack said years ago. They say they're going to have fun on that stage. And we just hope you as an audience member will come along with us and join the fun. So that's what I want to do. I don't like I don't like anything being very strict or anything. I like to just, I would even like the audience to participate with me. And if they want to sing along or get up and dance, or just have some words back. I've had conversations in the middle of my show. You know, there's kind of a script that I follow, but a lot of times, you know, audiences are different every night. And so it's just the spontaneous, you know, interaction that I love so much.
And, you know, like you speak about fun, and usually as a critic, even, like, I often find myself feeling like very wrong when I'm like, you know, someone's having fun. And like, we are almost taught that fun is like the opposite of, you know, being like a performer, right? And I'm like, that makes no sense, especially right now. When I've seen you on stage, you always make things fun. And is that something that, I mean, I get the sense that you're having the time of your life, even if you're playing the most tragic character ever. Is that something that you go into with each part, each character that you're playing? Like, you're like, okay, this character's sad, but I love my craft, and I'm going to have fun doing this.
That's a great question. And I think you did answer it just like it's so perfect, because in art, when you're trying to create art, you're trying to bring the best of who you are. I mean, because that's the only thing you can bring to a character, even if it's a historical figure that is a truthful figure. But I do have so much fun in pretend, you know, I make money pretending, you know, and dressing up. When I play a character like Sweeney Todd, you know, who's a murderer, you know, a serial killer, but yet there's a fun element to it. And you find those moments that you just burst out and interact with those people that are with you on stage, who are there as your team. Like, you are a team, and you're trying to take people on a journey each night. So yes, it's a lot of fun. Even it can be as tragic or as happy or comedy or whatever. But when it's something like this, like a show like this or a party like this is me, and this is who I am. And I just want to show everybody who I am. And there's no secrets. There's no, you know, it's a vulnerability. It's a everything. That's just, I'm opening up my heart and my soul. And I hope that you can too, or I invite you to interact with me in that way.
So let's say that someone goes to a party at your home. Like, what is Norm Lewis, the party host, known for? Like, do you have like a specialty, maybe some like appetizer that you make for each party?
It's funny, because I'm some people who know me really well know that I'm an infomercial whore, and I love QVC, and I love HSN, and I buy a lot of those products either as gifts, or sometimes I go, that could actually, you know, save me some time in the kitchen. So I'll buy products like that. And I actually use them. I don't just, you know, they're not in boxes just waiting to be opened. I will actually use them. And so I have little recipes that I will follow from the books that come along with those things that I like to try out on people. I'm not a great cook, but at least that device will help me in my cooking. And at least it'll cut off, you know, it's a set it and forget it kind of thing. But yeah, I'm good. I love appetizers. I love serving drinks. And, maybe I'll cook you a steak, or maybe I'll cook some fancy chicken dinner.
I love it. Like, maybe, yeah, I'm a 12 steak guy, by the way, if I'm ever invited. But we're talking about ingredients, and what better way to segue into the set list that you have prepared. And, you know, it's this perfect combination of holiday songs that we know, more modern holiday songs, but also more unexpected choices. And I don't want to spoil the set list for people, because I really want them to see this. But can you talk a little bit about this, finding the right measure, mm-hmm. so to speak, the right measurements to put together a set list for this?
Listen, you are so good. I love the way that you segued into that, as far as ingredients and then set list. I love that. You're so good. Yeah, you know, the thing about it, like in the midst of these 5 years, we decided to do a Christmas album and put some holiday songs together. But we also chose songs that they might not be holiday songs, but they fit the theme of what that music is. And I don't necessarily do all holiday songs at my shows anyway. So why not? Why not just throw in, you know, Bring 'Em Home or Music of the Night or whatever. And I'm going to be doing some of those things. I'm going to be doing some of those holiday songs as well. In fact, because of Zoom, this might be kind of weird, but I have my Christmas album, which is a vinyl, and then I have CD as well. So anyway, that was a shameless plug, but you can get that at any place that you get or you can stream it, any of your music. But yeah, you know, it's going to be, I got some new stuff that I'm looking at. There's a song called Be Aware that was written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David. And it's something that has been in the ethos for many years, but yet it still resonates in this time, in this society. And it's a great message and just makes people think. So yeah, I just want to share that story with them. I want to share what has happened to me this year. And because I know we've gone through some major challenges, and maybe we can kind of commune together and understand each other a little bit better.
There's no such thing as a shameless plug, by the way. Like, in fact, I wish I had that vinyl, because you can see back there I have all my vinyls. And yeah. Can you imagine? I could have had your vinyl there. So at the end of the show, you can tell us where to find it and how do I get to have that next time. Nothing like Bacharach and David, by the way. So yeah. I'm all about that. And but I'm really curious about, you know, we have a very almost predetermined way in which we go about tradition. And this is, you know, like people can be like, this is not a holiday song. This is a holiday song. This is, you know, like we all love checking each other and telling us the many ways in which we are wrong. But can you talk about, and you don't have to share them obviously if you don't feel comfortable, but to give you an example, one of my favorite Christmas traditions is watching black and white movies, none of them holiday related. You know, like I'll watch Casablanca and some of my favorite movies that I grew up watching, and I'll have burritos. None of those things say Christmas to anyone, but they are Christmas to me.
Right.
So when it comes to both your personal ones and, you know, like choosing songs, like Be Aware, what's like the process behind that?
Well, it's an interesting process because I've been working with, you know, my manager, Jeremy Katz, and also my musical director, Joseph Joubert, who's just fantastic and can arrange anything and play anything. And the mastermind behind most of my ideas, or the ideas that I actually come up with that end up in the show, is Richard J. Alexander. And he's, you know, this genius director from many years, and he works with people like Bernadette Peters and Bette Midler, and his biggest name, and Kristen Chenoweth, and his biggest name is Barbara Streisand, who he works with. So I'm lucky that I get a piece of who he is and his genius. So we listen to music all year, and we go, oh, that would be a great song to put into the arsenal, no matter what time of year. And then sometimes when we're constructing the show, we go, you know what? I think that song will fit in this section of the show. So it's a process that way. And literally, we will pick 100 songs throughout the year and go, hey, listen to this. You know, we'll send each other YouTube videos and go, what do you think about this song for my voice? What do you think about this song for my show? So
maybe this is like a really inappropriate question to ask.
Yeah.
But have you ever found a song that, even if you've tried a million ways, you just won't get to work for you? Although I don't think there's anything you can't sing, but.
Well, that's very kind. That's very kind of you. Not yet. I mean, I think we've found most of the songs, even if it's contemporary, even if it's something that's has a gospel flair, I'll bring my truth to it. Like the song, you know, you wouldn't think I think it was about 4 years ago, we really decided to use this. No, actually it was before then. No, it was 5 or 6 years ago. I never would have thought that I would be singing What's Going On, that Marvin Gaye wrote and sang on his album. And, you know, that was his anthem. Never thought that I would be singing that in a concert. But now I've done it all over the world. Anytime I've done a concert, that song definitely comes up because it actually has a fantastic message. And one of the things that my director, Richard J. Alexander, told me to do when I started singing it, he's like, don't get into the groove of it, because that's what people normally do. They start dancing to that groove, you know, it's all really cool. But listen and say the words. And I've had so many people come up to me and go, oh my God, I finally know what this song is about. And not that, you know, to take away from Marvin Gaye at all, but it was like, just stay focused on the lyrics, because Marvin Gaye is a great poet. He was not only a great singer and, you know, just a all great human being, but he was a great poet. And so he wanted him to focus. He wanted me to focus on the words.
Yeah. Right now, even when you said what's going on, I started like in my, you know, it's like I was listening to the beat, but then the words, it's almost like a prayer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for that insight. So what have you been up to this year? That's a loaded question, right?
So many things. I mean, once the pandemic actually, you know, once we got shut down, immediately people started reaching out and saying, hey, can you do this Zoom thing, or can you do this phone call or whatever? And now this new technology, like we're doing right now, has blossomed into even more. And I think it will probably become even more. So I started doing even teaching online. I did some master classes. I've done benefits. I've sent people messages, either birthday or just encouragement, you know, privately. I've gone into some corporate events where they just wanted a song and talk about, you know, my, you know, what I've done this year. So I started that out in the beginning. Then once the weather got warmer, I started venturing out just a little bit more. I was nervous, you know, because New York was the epicenter of everything and people were dying, you know, very quickly day by day. So I was very scared. On my birthday, June 2nd, which was the first day I actually did something socially distant with someone outside, went to Central Park. A couple of my friends said, we want you to sit with us picnic style, socially distant. One of those friends is Sierra Bagas, who's going to be a guest in my show. And so she made me go out and, you know, we talked about a lot of things, and it was refreshing. On Christmas Eve. Once I got that encouragement, I started doing a little bit more of that and doing, I don't know, just trying to, you know, live my life like everybody else. I lost all of my jobs for the year. And things just kind of got reinvented. And that's one reason why we're doing this particular party, as I call it, the party.
Yeah, it's been a very, especially for all of us that love theater so much, it's been a very dark year. And I don't really want to get into that because I think we all know how sad it's been. Yeah. So I want to go to the other side and ask instead, what have you discovered about yourself as a performer and as an artist by this new limitations? Because I mean, we are on stage right now. It's like we're all like designing this like little square stages,
right?
And for you, for instance, I've heard from so many musicians who speak about how they have learned how to time themselves because there's a delay maybe with their bands when they're playing live. And I'm curious, like, what are some things that actually you're like, I'm glad that now I have that new skill?
I learned a little bit more about technology. You know, obviously that's a great skill to have. And like your musicians, friends have said, yes, it's about the timing thing, in a lot of cases. Also listening to yourself, because it's a different thing when you're not amplified, on a stage and you just have to hear the rawness of your voice. It's a really interesting process because I can hear myself sometimes and you got the Bose speaker going along with your microphone in order to, you know, balance out the sound that the people can hear on the other side. And, you know, with Zoom, sometimes things cut out if you're hitting a big note, and it's trying to balance all that stuff out. Also, it's helped me focus on, like we were talking about before, the lyrics and connecting with people, even though it's a different way of connecting because it's not live in the sense of being able to actually touch someone. But you know, you and I are talking right now, so it's now reconnecting that artistry in a technological way. And so there's all kinds of new stuff that we're discovering. You know, it's been 9 months, but it feels like it's been 3 years.
I know, right? One of the things that I really miss the most as a theater goer and as an arts lover basically is being able to thank what all of you do with the applause. I feel like the first time I go see a show live in community, my hands are going to just like fall off, like when I boxed from clapping so much. And I wonder, I mean, I know that you don't necessarily miss the applause because you love the adoration, but the applause is the way that we thank you for the work that you've done. Mm-hmm. How can we thank you right now? And how have we thanked you digitally? Like, how can we know that artists know that we love what all of you are doing right now?
Well, I do miss the applause. I do miss that, because that energy does come to you and the sound and everything. But I can see sometimes on these Zooms that people are doing that, or sometimes people will go, yay, you can hear it through the Zoom. But even if not, like I did a concert with Seth Rudetsky, and it was just he and I. He was playing in his living room in Connecticut, and I was, I think it's upstate New York or whatever, and I was in my living room. But we were connecting over online to go out to the masses. And you know that people bought tickets in order to see this. So you knew you were live. You knew you were going to be touching people in some way. So you just focus on that. You focus on the material. And you know that people are responding, you know, even if you can't hear them, you know they're responding energetically through the air. And so you just accept that energy. But, you know, there's also this. Wait, hold on. There's also this thing, which I love. Can you see that?
I got it.
And so that helps a lot. When you know that people, and then people write you and you see in the chat or social media or whatever. And when you see those kinds of things, you know that you're doing the right thing.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit about the rapport that you have with your band and why you keep, collaborating with the people you collaborate with? Do your band members become like family in a way at some point?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Perry Cavari, the percussionist, George Farmer, he does the bass, both the acoustic and upright, and then Joseph Joubert, who is just a musical genius. It's a team, you know, and I've worked with Joseph before, so I knew his genius, and I knew that he was a sweetheart, and I knew that he was a brother, and so I wanted to work with him, so I'm honored that he said yes all these years, and, you know, early on. And then he put this band together. And over the years, you know, we've gone to a lot of different places around the country. And even when it came to doing the album, which I'm shameless. even when it came to doing the album, there was a little bit of conflict in the scheduling for one of the band members. And I said, we've got to work this out. I don't want a substitute person because these are the guys that I've been working with and I love them. But they, you know, we get to interact on stage. They're just not band members. They are family. We talk on stage. We have conversations. They're part of the show, if you will. They're part of the party. So I had to have them. And I hope that they will always say yes to me.
If you teach them the high kicks, they can also join you when you do the roquettes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I will tell you this. One of the jobs that I lost, which I was really, really... I mean, I've been disappointed about a lot of the other stuff, but this one I really wanted. I've worked with the New York Pops before, and I've performed at Carnegie Hall, but this was going to be the year that I was going to make my solo Carnegie Hall debut with the New York Pops. And one of the requests, which was actually going to be granted, was the fact that my band, my trio, could also be a part of the orchestra and play along with them. And so, you know, it's disappointing, but, you know, there's always... we're going to get back there. We're definitely going to get back there and soon.
So wait, were you going to do the Christmas show and it was going to be your solo
show?
No.
It was going to be in October 16th was the date we were supposed to do our show. And it's just an honor to be asked and to sing at Carnegie Hall. You know, I've performed there many times before, but never as a solo, like I'm the only person that people are coming to see. And it was just going to be great to see my name, Norm Lewis at Carnegie Hall kind of thing. So hopefully it'll come back around.
I'm sure it will. And when I think about Carnegie Hall, like I immediately think about my copy of Judy at Carnegie Hall, which is one of my favorite things in the world. And it's like falling apart and it's like, you know, almost in pieces, it still works. And I carry it with me every time I move. So when you're at a place like Carnegie Hall, like you probably obviously think about someone like Judy Garland, right? Or all these legends that have played there. So let's go, let's say it's a wish list for Santa or for agents, I guess, and producers. Mm-hmm. Who are some people that you haven't done any duets with that you would love to invite to join you at some point and sing with
you. Oh, man. Gosh. I mean, my favorite singer in the world is Johnny Mathis. So, but I've gotten a chance to do a duet with him a few years ago out in California. So that dream was fulfilled. But I love to record with him. Gosh, Tony Bennett is one of my heroes. I would love to work with, I've worked with Audra McDonald, so we're on something together. There's so many people. Kelly O'Hara, we've done a duet together. Jesus.
What about Barbara? Have you worked with Barbara yet?
Barbara Streisand. How about that? Listen, thank you. Listen, I would love to do anything with Barbara. Even if I just sing one note on something, if I harmonize in like one note. Yeah, Barbara Streisand, definitely. Kristen Chenoweth and I have not actually done, we did a show together years ago, but it was, you know, we never did anything together in the show. So I would love to do something with her. God, I've worked with LaChance. I'm trying, that's a great question. Now you got me baffled. I'm trying to think of, because there's so many people I would love to work with. You know, one of our great singers right now is, there's so many people. Jennifer Hudson, if she would have me. Tom Jones is still kicking ass. He still sounds amazing. So I would love to do something with him. So, there's a lot of folks.
Yeah, between like Tom Jones and Bacharach and Johnny Mathis, I want to ask, are you secretly my father?
I could be. Listen.
He loves all
of them
so much.
You're a young man. I could probably be your dad.
Or I'm sure that you would get along with him like very well. Like it's like very aligned musical tastes.
When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad.
Well, you said something that was really interesting, and you were talking about Christmas traditions and stuff, and I wanted to go back to that because I actually have a little story about that. You were talking about having burritos and watching black and white movies. And did you know, and even though it plays as a Christmas song, it's on my Christmas album and I do it in my shows all the time, but did you know that My Favorite Things, the song, is not a Christmas song? It just became a Christmas song. Do you know what I mean? Doesn't mention Christmas at all, but it's in The Sound of Music, and for some reason people just started singing it on Christmas albums. And so the first time I actually really heard it was the Supremes, the original Supremes. It was on their album. And then I finally saw The Sound of Music and I go, oh, that's that song, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to spoil your set list, but there's the wizard there. And like, that's also like something you're like, not Christmas, but like, it is Christmas. So let me ask you two things, because I know that we all, I mean, obviously we care about the world and we care about what's going on with everything right now. So what are your two wishes for Christmas 2020? And I want you to do a wish, you know, like the beauty pageant, like, because we care about the world and we all do. I also wanna hear what your like secret QVC wish is this for this year.
You are funny, I love it. Gosh, well, you know, listen, like everyone else, I want everyone's health to be much better. And I hope that we find some sort of, I don't want to say the vaccine. I mean, if you want to do the vaccine, that's a great thing. And because I know that there's a lot of political situations with that and conspiracy theories and blah, blah, blah. But I just want everybody to get healthy so the body can heal itself. I want people to continue to be safe, because this thing is still around and it's still very, it's still around. So just be very careful. I hope and pray, because not only was the pandemic around, but you know, there were social issues that we've had to deal with. There have been political issues we've had to deal with. I hope that we can finally come together. There's been a lot of chaos in the world. So my wish for Christmas is that we stop and slow down and think about the meaning of Christmas, whatever that is for you, or the meaning of the holiday season, And because it seems to be something that people do kind of slow down and kind of are nicer to each other around this time of year. I hope that continues into the new year. And I hope that the world accepts our new administration. I hope that we can come together as people and fight the main fight, which is the COVID virus, and deal with that together. We might have different political ideas and ideologies and stuff, but we've got to find a middle ground and respect each other. I used to be with this whole political thing. I would watch these videos on YouTube. It's like, ooh, so-and-so owned that person and told them off. And, you know, that's fun. It's fun. But after a while, it's like, when do you stop owning someone? And when do you start opening up and saying, okay, let me hear what you have to say. Let's come to some sort of understanding in this, because we got to live together. We got to respect one another. So that's a long answer, but I hope it resonates.
No, absolutely. It does, because it makes me think, and I don't want to get like too emotional, or I don't want to get like into...
Oh, get emotional. Come that. On.
Okay, no, but you know, it makes me think about how precisely one of the saddest things is that as human beings, because I thought about one of your songs, you know, why couldn't it be Christmas every day? It could, if we all put our nonsense aside and like just learn how to freaking love each other more.
Yeah.
That's it. We could be having Christmas. Can you imagine, Norm, presents and food and maybe that would be too much every day, but just like the spirit of like loving each other every day, like Christmas, that would be something that we all should aspire to. But you were sneaky and you didn't give me your secret QVC.
All right. Oh, I don't know what's out there right now, because I haven't had time to watch it, but I just do know that they have had, okay, I have a steamer that I bought because I used, you know, obviously I would travel all around the world a lot, and I would take my tuxedos and I would take my shirts and my pants. And a lot of times, even though I would have them dry cleaned before I left, they still would be wrinkled, and I would have to get someone to like, oh, can you press this? Or I would send it down. And I saw a steamer that was for $16 on HSN. And it's called the Mini Steamer. And the thing about it, I kept saying, I said, this thing is so cheap, it's not going to work. Well, it's the best thing I've ever, even from a professional standpoint. I bought several of them and I've given them away and sent them off to other people in different parts of the country. But it is so amazing and it saved me so much money. So now I just ball up my stuff and just throw it in the suitcase. And once I get there, I start steaming it because it gets the wrinkles out like that. And the thing about it, for me, it's become therapeutic, because I'm like, okay, I got to concentrate on my show. I got to get my pants together. I got to get my, my jacket, my shirt. It's amazing.
Okay. Now I want that, because now you just made me go eureka a little bit too late, because I thought you meant the other kind of steamer, because I don't have that kind of steamer, which you're supposed to do for like vegetables and like food.
Oh, that. No. I mean, they have that kind of stuff too, but because that was something that I needed immediately and I needed frequently, that was one of the first things that came to mind. And I was like, yeah, I love this steamer. In fact, when you on my Instagram, you're going to see me steaming my clothes pretty soon. I'm going to put one of those videos up, and then one of my guests is going to come in my room and say, hey, steam this too.
Oh, I love that. That's a good, like, you know, like a t-shirt. No, because I thought about, I do have one of those steamers. I don't have that amazing one that you own, but I do have a steamer. And for the past few days, I've been microwaving the things that I'm supposed to steam. And I'm thinking, after I finish talking to Norm Lewis, should I go try using my clothes steamer to see if I can make my dumplings? But, you know, yeah. And I will not be posting a video of that, so don't you worry. Thank you, Norm Lewis. Like, now this is the time where you can plug all you want and show us that beautiful final cover, because I do want it over there.
What are you talking about? You mean this? This whole thing? Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yes,
it comes in and it has, you know, it's got, oh, you can't really see it. Oh, it goes away. But anyway, it's got the sleeve and blah, blah, blah. And then, and then there's the, you know, the CD, or you can stream it at whatever, you know, wherever you get your music. Also, December 17th, 8:00, join me for the opening of, Christmas Time is Here, Norm Lewis. at Feinstein's 54 Below. And then you can stream it for 2 weeks after that till December 31st. And just come and join me. Again, it could be if you haven't gotten a gift for any family member or friend and you can't think of anything, buy them this evening, because I think they will get a lot of joy out of it, and especially after this year. So
I promise my best that I will work hard so that every time someone asks, you know, what are you doing New Year's Eve? Norm's show. Like, I'll remind them, like, go watch it right now.
That's right.
And they can dance to it. Like, they can have a little party while you're sick. I mean, can you imagine that luxury of having you in our homes, like, every night singing to us so we can dance and have some champagne?
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Thank you so much, sir. And have the happiest of holidays. I hope all your wishes, both the QVC ones and the larger ones, come true.
And listen, I love your sweater. I think it's awesome. And all the holiday stuff in the background. It's fantastic.
I'll get you one for sure. You can wear it to your next show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.